Yeah. Gross sales last year were roughly $45,000. When I say this is fairly part-time, it is extremely part-time.
What is up, my fellow side hustlers? This is your friend and host, Ryan Helms. I want to welcome you to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. I'm part of a small minority that are taking action because we just aren't satisfied with waking up, going to a 9-to-5 job, then coming home only to repeat it again the next day and never make any real progress in life. We're here to create our own path, our own happiness, our own freedom, and we refuse to be just another cog in the machine. Because we have busy lives and limited resources, we can't just throw stuff against the wall and hope that something sticks. We have to play smart and move forward each day with consistent focus and deliberate effort while using only today's best tactics and most efficient tools. We aren't going to sit back and hope for a 3% raise each year. We are building additional income sources that will allow us to create the life we want. We call ourselves Freedom Chasers. And this podcast highlights the journeys of these everyday people who are creating extraordinary side hustles. Welcome to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. If you haven't already, go pick up a copy of the Side Hustle Journal to expedite the process of going from idea to income with your side hustle. You can pick up your free copy over at gritandhustle.co. That's gritandhustle.co. In this episode, I'm chatting with Mark Gaskins about how, in his downtime from his primary business, he started a candle company without ever making a candle before, and how he grew it into a $40,000 side hustle last year. Let's not waste any more time and jump into this conversation now.
So I'm Mark Gaskins. 38, soon to be 39, in Charleston, South Carolina. It is my hometown. I moved back here about 6 years ago when I helped my brother open a bar. He is a food and beverage entrepreneur, and he is growing like crazy. Unfortunately, about five years ago or so, the bar burned down, which was a pretty scary moment in its own. I was there that night, and it's always so funny. You always hear the phrase that the phoenix rises from the ashes, and it really did. It kind of prompted us both, myself and him, to just grab the entrepreneur spirit, I guess the bull by the horns in that situation, and just go find income. Mm-hmm. We had started a bar service as well. The bar is called Squeeze. The bar service is called Squeeze on Site. And through that, we also found out that caterers needed kitchen equipment. So we started a company called Event Kitchens, and that is essentially my full-time gig right now. That's my full-time job, but it's very seasonal. I have about 14 weeks off a year, so I go a little stir crazy. And in that time frame, I've kind of begun trying to
find. What drives that seasonality?
So the wedding industry in Charleston goes from basically March 1st until July 4th, and then there's 7 weeks off until Labor Day, and then it runs right through the holidays. So I basically deliver kitchen equipment, ovens, ranges, fryers, grills, hot boxes, anything that you need to cook where there is not a kitchen, commercial kitchen, for hundreds of people, I can provide that for you. It's all on wheels. It's propane-based. I have about 5 full kitchens, and when I say a full kitchen, I mean an oven, range, and a fryer, but they're individually pieced out. So if you just need an oven, I can bring you just an oven. And you rent it for the night and I pick it back up. But it's either too cold in Charleston or too hot. And many of our venues are plantations or historic homes. They, one, don't build kitchens because they don't want to burn down a 300 or 400-year-old building. Or two, they can't build them. They don't have the space to do it or don't want to do it. There's some pretty strict, I guess, restrictions, if you will, on what you can do to historic properties, which creates a business in renting out commercial kitchen equipment. And that's my full-time job. And it definitely pays my bills. And I'm very lucky that it does that. But I think most entrepreneurs, when there's downtime, they're always looking for something else. And
yeah, absolutely. I was just in Charleston maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, actually. I think we went to one of those plantations, and I wonder if they rented something from someone like you because they cooked for us. It was it Boone Plantation, maybe?
Boone Hall? What, was it a wedding?
Yeah, that Boone Hall. No, it was a work event. We had a conference, so we had like 50 or so people.
Oh, nice. At the Cotton Dock, I'm assuming, right? Yep. There on the creek?
Yeah, absolutely.
Who were you with?
It was CCSMG, was the conference?
I don't know. Most likely it was my kitchen equipment, to be honest with you. I'm one of two and probably the only guy that really works out there full time. If I knew the caterer, I could definitely tell you who it was. But I worked a big work. It was a corporate event out there on like a Monday or a Tuesday, which is very rare. But you said you were there for the weekend?
No. This was during the week. This was probably like a Tuesday.
Yeah, that was probably me then. Yeah, about 5-6 weeks ago, I worked a Tuesday out there.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild.
There we go. We were connected closer than we thought.
Exactly. That's pretty funny.
Cool. So you had this downtime. You had these weeks off based on the seasonality of your full-time business. What kind of thoughts or ideas, like what kind of stuff did you try out? I imagine if you've got this entrepreneurial bug, you tried out maybe a few different things, or you had a few different ideas running through your head during that downtime.
Well, before I moved back to Charleston, I was living in Colorado, and Sports Authority used to do these major discounted markets where they called them sneagrabs, which is basically bargains spelled backwards. And I would walk in there and see Burton snowboards for $99. Well, I would immediately Google it and see what they were selling for $250 somewhere else. So I would buy up every single board I could find for $99 and sell it on eBay. Well, I didn't realize what Amazon was, that there were sellers on Amazon. I didn't realize that was a whole nother avenue to sell. So when I moved back to Charleston, I just started calling different brands saying, hey, brand XYZ, can I buy your stuff and sell it on Amazon? They'd say yes, or they'd say no. A lot of times it was no. Brands just don't want a random person selling their stuff. You need to have a business license. You need to have a retail sales tax license. You need to be completely fitted to be able to sell somebody else's brand, because they've essentially got to give you tax forms to prove that you're collecting sales tax, right? I actually stumbled upon a candle company here in Charleston called Rewind Candles, and they're about a $40 million a year business. It's insane. They're only about 10 years old. The guy was a bartender, much like myself, saw a wine bottle, cut it in half, threw a candle in it, and boom, they're worldwide, right? I called them and said, can I buy your candles and sell them? They said, absolutely. So I got into just growing that. Unfortunately, the plug got pulled on me with multiple brands, because eventually, and you find out on Amazon, if you ever get in that game, it's always a race to a penny, right? If you're $29.99, the next guy is going to come in at $28.99. Then you go $27.99. And it just, eventually nobody makes money and it just fizzles out. So when that kind of happened, it was still in my time. It's great. It would create these paychecks of a couple hundred bucks every 2 weeks, which is nice. I mean, I know everybody out there needs a couple hundred bucks. But when it fizzles out, around the same time I walked into a store in Austin, Texas. And it was called Stag. It's an upscale men's boutique store. Really cool spot. If you're in Austin, go check it out. They give you a beer when you walk in. So I think they encourage you to buy more, right? And I picked up a candle and it was 9 ounces and it was $85.
Oh, shit.
And I immediately thought to myself, I'm on the wrong side of this whole situation, right? Like, I'm the second middleman. When I get it from Rewind, I give it to Amazon. Then it's Rewind, me, Amazon customer. There's four people in that equation. It just needs to be me customer or me Amazon customer. On the flight home that day, I was actually running the half marathon in Austin that weekend. And on the flight home, I just came across this name, Meeting and Market, which is a major cross street in Charleston. Meeting Street and the old market, if you've ever been to Charleston, is a pretty historic area. Came up with that name and essentially created a brand and thought, I'll just manufacture and just brand myself. That'll be so easy. It's not so easy sometimes, you know? It's not so easy to just create a brand and everybody just goes and buys it.
The product itself, did you have any experience making candles?
Never did, actually. So I actually Googled how to make a candle. And there's a great company out of Raleigh, North Carolina called CandleScience.com. They will give you, I think they're the largest purveyor of DIY candles in the country. Now, they'll start with anything as small as 1 pound of wax, and then they'll sell you a truckload of wax. Same with oils. They'll sell you 1 ounce or they'll sell you 55 gallons. I'm not to a truckload yet, but I'm definitely more than a pound. And they put up some YouTube videos, which is so important in the world of e-commerce, always put out content, right? And I stumbled on their content of, I think this woman was in her 60s and it was a camera that kind of shot straight up, you know, from the ceiling down to her tin. And she shows you how to melt it, how to mix it, how to pour it, how to set it, how to make sure the wicks don't fall over. And I watched that about 5 times and then just went to Michael's and bought everything I needed. And I think I gave away a couple hundred candles just to friends and family and said, tell me what you think. Is it right? Is it wrong? Does it melt right? Does it melt wrong? Does the wick work? And then I just ponied up and went to a farmer's market and kind of did a double blind audition, if you will, where I didn't know a single customer and a single customer didn't know me. And it was a banging success from day one. And
what does that mean? Take us through that first little farmer's market that you went through, and how was it? Did you just have like a little booth with like 20 or 30 candles on the table and you're like shaking people's hands and kissing babies, or what was it like?
Yeah, basically so. I mean, I've actually gone through three different styles of vessels. So this was still in my early days, and it looked very Yankee Candle-ish in the beginning. And it was not the greatest design, but my thought process was, if I really want to make something happen and start making money, I can't continue to give these away to my family and friends. Cause it cost me, you know, $4 to $5 just to make one. And I just said, you know what? Bite the bullet, go for a day. It's $25. You need a tent, you need a table. There are some things you get started for a farmer's market. If people are looking to get started, probably going to need liability insurance, because if your tent flies over and punctures somebody, the farmer's market's going to look at you in that situation. Tent can run anywhere from $100 to $300. I luckily already had one. You're going to need a table, maybe $40 at a Walmart or something, maybe less. You're going to need some sort of tablecloth or something to make your booth look nice. And you'll probably need some signage. So you're looking at some startup money, but I think that first day I sold roughly $200 to $250 and basically ran that sales every Saturday for 6 months. I mean, it was because I kept meeting new clients and new clients and new clients. And I was only selling one candle at the time. It was a 16-ounce large candle for $25. It's massive. It's heavy. I mean, you could hurt somebody with this thing. But I was selling them at $25 a pop with nobody even questioning it. And,
How'd you settle on $25?
So it's actually my retail price at the time was $32. Reasoning being was it was costing me about $8 to make it. Wholesale would be $16. So if I sold to a retail store, I would charge them $16 for it. They would then double it to $32. I actually didn't even know that was the right pricing, but the first retail store I knocked on the door, she said, "What's your price?" And I said, "I got to be honest with you, what would you pay for it?" She goes, "What did you make it for?" I said, $8. She goes, "Well, then charge me 16 and I'll charge 32. And I said, "That sounds great." I just felt 32 was too much for a direct to consumer price at a farmer's market. Mm-hmm. You know, I think when you go to a market, I think one, there's a little bit of negotiation to be had sometimes. Two, I think they're looking for a slightly less price than what they could get at the high-end boutique hotel downtown. So I set on 25, worked that for about 6 months. It was great. And then just started picking up more and more markets. And I gotta be honest, after about 3 years, I made the decision last week that I'm like burnt out. I mean, I just need a Saturday just to sit on my couch and just watch some English Premier League soccer and just know what's going on again. I just feel like I've missed every event over the last 2.5 years because I've been just working these markets. And I'm actually in multiple cities now too. So I've hired some folks in Columbia, South Carolina. They're running a market for me, which is probably our best market. It's the Soda City market for any folks out there in Columbia. If you're looking to try something, it is without a doubt the best farmer's market I've ever worked. It is
scale, or what is it?
Yeah. So they're downtown. I think the issue with Charleston is Charleston has so many competing farmers markets that you have five on a single Saturday, all within 15 miles from each other. So you're breaking up the population very much so. Where in Columbia, this thing spreads about five city blocks from the state capital, like five blocks out. And I actually was there last weekend, and 30 minutes before we started, we were already selling. It was that busy. And so I took a photo. The street was packed 30 minutes before the market even started. And I'm looking for more markets like that. So if there's any farmers market owners out there who need a candle maker, I'll be out there in a heartbeat. It's lovely how busy that one is. But I'm taking 2 months off right now. Sometimes I think you just got to check your mental health and make sure that you can be the best salesman and business owner and boss that you can be. But if you're burnt out, you're doing nobody any favors.
It sounds like not only are you spending a lot of time at the markets, but we're not even talking about the time that it takes to make the actual product.
Absolutely.
What does that process look like? Are you still doing that yourself? Tell us about that.
So for the first 2 years or so, I'm by year four right now. The first 2 years were made in my house, and my girlfriend was not happy. I mean, because those large candles take a good 8 hours to set. I mean, you move them, they're ruined. So I would make them on the stove, and I would take the rack out of my microwave and put that over the sink and then set the candles on top of the rack. The reason you do that and you don't put them on a counter is because if you put a hot container at 160 degrees on a counter, the countertop will actually draw the heat out of the candle. It won't cool at an even pace. So I would put it over like a metal rack so that air could circulate around the candles. Unfortunately, when that happens, not only was the stove shut down, the sink was shut down, and we're in a two-bedroom townhouse with those. They have those small kitchens, like almost like in a boat. You know, it's so small you bump into each other when you just turn around. And I did not win any points during that time frame. But I've got a warehouse for my kitchen equipment, about 1,000 square feet, and 100 square feet of that is an air conditioned room. And it's very tight in there, but I moved to a 60-pound wax melter so I can fit 60 pounds of wax in that container. And then I can pour probably upwards to 150 candles at a time. Whereas in my house, it was 12 candles at a time and taking so much more time. I can go in there in my warehouse now. I can turn on the wax melter, walk away for an hour, do some stuff, you know, cleaning up or whatever I need to do, prepping the candles, come back in an hour, the wax is melted, and I can just start pouring nonstop. And I still feel like it's a small operation compared to most. I mean, some places they have 1,000-pound wax melters and 2,000-pound wax melters, but, you know, just got to grow with when you can and how you can. And the beautiful thing about that place now, though, at the warehouse is that it is temperature controlled. I can set the temperature, and I can most times when I pour candles and I come back the next day, they've set perfectly. I don't have to mess with them. There are a few different oils when you get into mixing the wax with oils. Sometimes they just don't connect really, and it leaves it very craterish, or almost like, have you ever seen like a really badly burnt creme brulee? It looks like that on top, where it's very granular, so you have to go back and do a re-pour. But 9 times out of 10, I just pour and I walk away and I come back the next day and just start packaging them up. And which, speaking of manufacturing, that's kind of where the business is starting to go. And I don't know if you want to talk about that now, but
One question, you know, I think that is a great direction to go. But before we get there, I'd like to talk about, you know, we started with this one giant brick of a candle at the farmer's market, right? You had one product, you're selling it was selling well. Like, how did you transition into having multiple products, all these different flavors? Sounds like some with oil, some without oils, probably different waxes, all these different fragrances. Like, how'd you get there?
Yeah. All right. So I'll back up real quick. So I sourced a few different waxes when I first started. And I end up settling on a wax that you can get through candlescience.com called Golden Brands 464. It's a soy wax that doesn't have petroleum in it. So it's not oil-based, crude oil. It burns cleaner. It burns longer. You don't get black soot on your walls if you correctly trim the wicks. The oils are not essential oils. They are fragrance oils that are blended many times with essential oils. And I get the question a lot, hey, are your candles 100% essential oil? And they're not. It actually would be, in my mind, pretty expensive to try to use 100% essential oils. I started with the large candles because I really just wanted to make a statement. I wanted somebody who bought my candle and gave it to somebody as a gift, when they felt the weight of it, when they saw the label and the kind of classic minimalist style, because it's a very simple label. I don't have any crazy stuff in the background. It's a craft brown paper, which is black border and some black ink. It's just simple. And I just wanted, when people got it, they thought to themselves, damn, like that's a present, like that's a gift. Mm-hmm. And the person who bought it thought to themselves, yeah, I just spent $25, but it's well worth it because I know that's going to burn for 60 hours and I'm going to see it when I go over to their house. It's not going to be a throwaway gift. I did learn though that I priced myself out of a lot of markets. For the person who, you know, farmers markets are very cash heavy, right? And if you're there to buy your groceries and maybe a few other things, and I hit you first with $25, now you've got a budget for the rest of the day. So the first glassware was the round Yankee Candle-ish 1980 style. I quickly found an amber jar. And if folks want to go to my Instagram account, it's @meeting_and_market, which I'm sure you'll post. Yeah. You can go through all the way to the bottom and see the transition that we've been through. It was a really great amber glassware with a silver lid top. Unfortunately, I had some quality issues with it and you could see the seams in it. And I had a few people who wrote me and messaged and said, hey, this candle just broke. And what was happening is when we got down to the bottom, there's a seam around the bottom. The oil would get so hot. When the wax would melt, it would get so hot, it would actually shatter this glassware. So I was at a trade show in Atlanta, which is a whole nother story. But I ran into my glassware rep and I was telling these stories. And to his credit, he said, stop buying it. He goes, I don't want you selling that if those are the stories I'm getting. And I'll go back to our guys. And if we can make it better, we'll give it back to you. But don't buy it because that sounds... A girl sent me a photo of her coffee table, this beautiful barnwood coffee table with about a 1-foot diameter oil stain on it.
Oh,
and
wow.
She just said it cracked. I don't know if that's what happened, but the only thing I can think of, when I put hot water in these things, it would crack. And I have a feeling that's what happened, which I feel awful about. And I guess that's why you carry insurance. I mean, she didn't say anything to me, but she didn't try to come after me. But I definitely thought to myself, something's not right here. So I immediately switched to our current clear glassware, which I sourced through Libby, which Libby's a great glassware company for food service companies and you know, anything else really. When I went to Libby, their style that I bought, the large 16 ounce, they also offered a 5 ounce. So I immediately put out a small 5 ounce candle as well. So I have a 16 ounce and 5 ounce. And the 5 ounce by far, probably 5X to 7X every Saturday sells better than the large.
Where'd you price that one at?
That's at 10 at the market. And if it's retail, it's 14.
Okay. And so go into that, the smaller candle size and also having the larger one. Can you give us any insight or are you comfortable sharing any on like how much you money you've made off the candle business, maybe last year or in total, whatever you feel comfortable sharing?
Yeah. Gross sales last year were roughly $45,000. Okay. And that is, when I say this is fairly part-time, it is extremely part-time. Other than Saturdays, the reason Saturdays is so important to me, what I was talking to earlier, is the event kitchens business, that's its main day. Everybody gets married on Saturday. They don't get married on Wednesday, right? Mm-hmm. So I have to be moving on Saturdays. And it, I'm sorry, go back to that question.
No, I was just asking about like, you know, how much you've made off the candle business. You said around 45 last year, I think.
Yeah, that's correct. So a lot of times on Saturdays, I'll have either me or somebody else working the market for 4 hours. Now, mind you, you're putting back $250 on a Saturday. That adds up pretty quick. Where really I saw a big push last year was I worked the holiday market circuit nonstop. I mean, I was literally the day I stopped, I got the flu. I mean, I grinded it out. And I mean, I probably made 40% of my money in that last 6 weeks. I mean, if you think about $250 a Saturday times four, that's $1,000. I mean, you're only at 12 grand at that. And I'm actually right now, I've kind of stopped calling on retail stores. And part of me thinks that I should be calling on them. But at the same time, at the start of last year, I got into 6 retail stores, and in 6 months, almost every single one of them called me and said, we can't compete in this market. We got to shut our door. Charleston's real estate is so expensive right now for commercial side that you can't be a boutique shop downtown slinging candles. And if you'd want me to be in there, you're going to ask me to be consignment. Well, you know what consignment means? It means I don't make money up front, right? You know, and I can't float my business because you can't float yours.
Right.
So what I've started to do, well, going back to that, so $45,000, I'm pumped for that. I mean, and to be honest with you, I wish I had somebody I could hire right now just to go out there and be my salesperson, because I know we could take it from 45 to 150 in 1 year. But I'm running a whole nother business. You know, this is just, I make these candles in my free time and I sell them in markets or hire somebody to sell them on Saturdays. That's it. You know, and it can be a grind, but you know what? It can also put that, if you got a credit card or you got some debt mounted up, just go after it, because the money, that $300 to $400 a week or every 2 weeks can start hammering that stuff down and bail you out of a dire situation. And I know that absolutely. From personal.
Yeah, me too. I mean, just actually have a video I haven't put out yet, but I just finished paying off my debt. So thankfully to starting a side hustle, just like you're saying, I paid off right at $56,000 in about 17 months.
Hell yeah, so, man. I tell you what, to kind of harp on that, I think I paid off about $27,000 last year. Now that was personal. That was IRS taxes, because you know, when you get self-employed, sometimes, you know, things catch up to you real fast, right? And it takes a minute to get caught up. And I'm not the most detail-oriented person, so I probably missed a few things along the way, but this candle company bailed me out. And I mean, I will, if it failed tomorrow, I don't want to say fail because it succeeded 100%. If it stopped tomorrow, I could look at it, give it a kiss on the cheek and just walk away and say, you did your job. I appreciate it. Let's go after something else, because it has bailed me out, you know? And it's just, you have time to do something. Sorry, this is my soapbox. I always feel like somebody, you have time to do something on the side. When you listen to your podcast or to Side Hustle School, sorry, you can edit that out if you need
no,
to.
No, go for it, man.
When you listen to people's side hustles and you don't come away thinking, my word, there are so many different ways to make a dollar in this world, you're fooling yourself. There's so many ways to make money that it's crazy. Now, the scariest thing is just jumping. You know, you got to take that leap at some point, you know, and if you're an awesome knitter, make some hats and take it to the farmer's market. If you paint, start painting people's dogs. They go nuts for that stuff, right? Like, just do something and post it online and see what you can get. I mean, there's crazy world out there that
Yeah, absolutely, man. Especially if you've got debt. I mean, stop going out and spending money. Like, work on something that's going to help expedite that process. And, you know, you can eat ramen noodle and black beans for the next 3 years and pinch pennies and pay it off. Or you can spend your spare time building an asset that's going to generate money and speed up that process. Your choice.
Absolutely. I think one of the smartest decisions. So the first 6 months of the farmer's market, I then took off 2 months and a buddy called me, said, "Do you want to bike across the country?" And I said, "We've been talking about it for 5 years or so, usually over beers and not in a sober state." But I guess they say the true mark of a man is will he do sober what he says he'll do drunk, right? And so he called me one day, said, "Do you want to go on this bike trip?" And I said, "Absolutely, man." Well, actually, I said, "Hold on, let me call you back." I hung up the phone, I looked at Jess, and who's my girlfriend. I said, "Danner just called me. He wants to go on this bike trip." She goes, "Well, why didn't you say yes?" And I said, "All right." I called him right back, and I had like 9 months to prepare for it, right? So this is before the farmer's market. Go to the farmer's market, leave for 2 months, go on this bike trip. And it changed my life completely. I mean, first day, I thought I was going to die. The second day, basically until day six, I thought I was just dead on a bicycle. But we took 44 days. We went from Manchester by the Sea, Massachusetts, all the way to Astoria, Oregon, in blazing speed. But it just gave me 44 days. And I know that this more than a lot of people get to kind of meditate and think about what they need to do in life. But it made me focus on where I was going wrong and what I needed to do right. And it was a tough pill to swallow. But when I came back from that trip, I immediately started focusing on the debt. Like you were just talking about, you knocked all yours out. I re-energized the candle company because I just didn't know where it was going. It was, you know, I worked the markets for a little bit just to seeing if people were interested. And then I just came home, and over the next, I got done September almost 2 years ago. So up until now, I've just been running hard. And in my mind's eye, the mantra of the trip was pedal over pedal. You'd call home to people and they'd be like, "Oh my gosh, you guys are at the Rocky Mountains. How are you going to get over it?" And I just would say, "Pedal over pedal. You know, how are you going to get to the Great Plains? Just pedal over pedal. It's one stroke at a time. And you've got to slow life down to look at it that way so that you can literally each pedal stroke was going forward." And so on top, that debt situation was, it's scary. It's really scary. I mean, you had more than I did, and that I couldn't imagine. That's super scary stuff. But you got to just put one foot in front of the other and start making a move, because, you know, going out every night and spending $75 in the bar, when my brother and I had the bar and we would see people come in and it was on a credit card every night, you're like, "What are you doing, man?" Like, yeah. Focus on something more positive. You know, sorry for my rant.
No, I can definitely say I relate. So rant away. But so
can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
What started you, or what made you see the light in clearing your debt? For me, I listened to Dave Ramsey's podcast every day when I walk my dog, and just listen to people telling their stories of clearing debt out.
Yeah. So for me, you know, some people listening will know, some people won't, but you know, I'm glad you asked. For me, it was a trip to Africa. So I took a solo trip to Kenya and Tanzania. I was getting burnt out with work, and you know, just over my left shoulder here, I was sitting on the couch, and it was a Friday night. I can remember it like it was yesterday. And so I don't know how I got to searching for plane tickets, but I found a plane ticket to Nairobi, Kenya for like $750 round trip from Atlanta. And I was like, "Man, that seems pretty cheap, like, to go to Kenya." And then I was like, "Wait, if I went to Kenya, I could like go on a safari or something. That'd be pretty cool." So long story short, I bought a ticket in like June to Nairobi, Kenya, almost probably forgot about it. And then like 3 months later, I was like, "Oh man," because I'd bought it for over Thanksgiving. So end of November timeframe. So I bought it like 5 months in advance. So we get to probably like mid-September, and I was like, "Guess I should start planning this thing." So I did. And I went, long story short, I went on a safari, went to Zanzibar, an island off the coast of Tanzania, and it was just a life-changing experience. I met so many people that were traveling the world long-term, that were just enjoying life, however they got there, whether they were entrepreneurs, whether they sold everything they had and were just traveling to see how long they could do it. I mean, tons of different stories. One guy was climbing the corporate ladder. I think he was 38. He had been climbing the corporate ladder with his best friend. They worked at the same company. They'd worked there like 10 years. They'd both been advancing, but just focusing on their careers. And then one day his buddy got hit by a car and died.
Oh my God.
He's like, for him, that put it in perspective. He'd been traveling for like 14 months around the world when I met him at that point. And when I got done with that trip, I was like, "Man, like, I've got student loan debt. I've got a stupid ass car that's cool and it looks awesome, but I really don't need it." And, you know, I just took a step back and I was like, "All right, I got to figure out how to get this done." And I didn't want to pinch pennies. I still wanted to live life. So I figured the only logical thing was to figure out how to make more money on top of the money that I was already making. So here we are.
There we are. I love that story. That's pretty cool, man. It sucks about the guy who got hit by the car, obviously, but you know, for the guy who's traveling, I mean, what a way to just, I guess, re-look at life and understand it's not about just climbing the ladder. I think that's why I don't know that I could go work for anybody else. I'm glad I have the business that supports me and the side business that kind of, you know, contributes to the other stuff. And, you know, it's kind of funny because in my household right now, you know, I have these 7 weeks off. I'm in the middle of a 7 week off right now. Started July 5th, essentially, and it'll go to Labor Day. And, you know, I feel bad because I have the opportunity to go on two different vacations, but my girlfriend's got to stay here because she's got to work, you know, and I don't say that as in like I'm leaving her here. She just doesn't have the freedom to go.
Right.
You know? And it's obviously I would, you know, once my family's taking two different trips and they're like, you guys come on. And I'm like, I'd love to go. So it kind of creates a situation in the household that, I mean, I feel guilty because I've created a life now where I have time off and I've got the ability now financially to do it. And I want to jump all over. And the plan is next year next year, this time frame, be gone all 7 weeks. The house is going to be put into hopefully an Airbnb situation where I can make the money here at the house while I'm gone. Mm-hmm. And then her brother lives out in Leadville, Colorado. And she and I used to live in Boulder area. We just love it out there and would like to get back to see if we can't spend 7 weeks out there next year and just work from remotely. And that's much like you, that's the goal for me. Like, I don't like to tie down and I don't like to be in one place too long. So like, go see the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need to recognize it and knocking it out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's been an awesome journey. So, you know, we were talking about like where your business, where your side hustle is, where your main business is. But I think your side hustle from what little bit you told me beforehand and a little bit what I've seen on like your Instagram and your website, I feel like it's making a small little pivot, maybe course correction or whatever you want to call it. You want to tell us what's going on there?
Yeah, that's actually 100% accurate. So my cousin, about back in April, she called me up and said, hey, do you think you can make some candles for our wedding? And I was like, yeah, sure. She's like, well, can you price them out for us? And I said, yeah. It's like, you know, if I look at all my hard costs and my time, I can make you these 5 ounce candles for $6. And that'll come with, it's a glass candle with a label on the front, a cardboard box that's completely blank, with also the same label. And it basically says, thank you for making our day. Love, Liz and Tony. Mm-hmm. And I just posted on Instagram and man, it blew up. I mean, within hours, it was my most popular post. And I said, hold on a second. I post photos all the time of my own candles and they never get this response. So I just started I recently adjusted the thing is where I'm still selling my own brand, but I'm moving into more of a manufacturing situation where if you, for instance, I just got an order today for a girl wanted two candles for her friend's birthday. I thought I had them up here, but they're basically, they just say, happy birthday, love Carmen, you know, happy birthday, Allie, or love Carmen or something like that. And it's like, I don't necessarily want to be in the game of like making two candles for labels. You know, I want to be more so in like the 100 to 150 range, like wedding guests or corporate events. But I can go in there and in 2 hours, I can knock that out. Whereas, and I can sell them at essentially a wholesale pricing, but you can do the math. 150 times three, that's $450. Like that's $450 profit minus any incidentals or if I got to hire somebody. I charge $6, I make three, right? Which what you should do, like value your time and your work, right? Yeah. So, but I'll make $450, which is two farmers markets, which is 8 hours. And it's, you know, 8 hours of my time, actually 12 hours of my time when you factor in driving there and driving back. And it's like, just trying to, I think you always got to look at, I heard this great podcast the other day about opportunity cost. And it's like the opportunity cost of A versus B, right? Like always be reassessing where you're spending your time and what money or value you're getting from it. And if I'm spending 6 hours on a Saturday and only making a profit of $100 or less if I'm hiring somebody, those are just kind of inconsequential numbers there. But if I'm only making that much money, but I can go make candles for 2 hours and walk with $300 to $450, like why wouldn't I do that? Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm on Etsy and I was on Etsy originally with my own candles, never sold any. I'm on these and I'm just getting ping left and right. People are like, hey, I've got a wedding coming up. What can you do for this? Can you do that? And it's like, you can see there's a whole nother market there. And I think one of the cool things was, it's like, this just happened. I just delivered them this week. I've gone from being somebody who doesn't know how to make candles and learning how to make candles on YouTube to making candles for an international hotel, right? Wow. The Belmont Charleston place has hired me to make their candles for their spa. Right? Each Belmont hotel's got a theme and theirs is a peach tea theme here in Charleston. And I made them a peach tea candle. It's two different scents blended together. And I laugh at the fact that I'm making candles for an international hotel now, right? But it's a hell of a resume builder, you know what? And when I tell a boutique shop across the street, like, yeah, I make the candles for that shop too. And they're like, cool, sign me up, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of been working that angle now. And that's kind of my, I don't know if I'm going to get back into the farmer's market game here in Charleston, just because I've hit a little, just burnt out. But the folks in Columbia, they just keep selling, and I'll just keep supplying them with candles. And if there's anybody here in Charleston who wants to get hired to work for farmers markets, give me a ring. I'll be happy to hire you on. And but the manufacturing side is like the really, that's kind of where I just kind of get in the groove. You know, yeah. It's like I can go in the warehouse and just put some tunes on and just knock them out. And I just need more
customers. You can do it on your time, right? You're not tied to a clock.
Absolutely. And on Saturday mornings, you're tied to a clock, you know, and it, so the manufacturing side is getting really cool. I'm really excited about it. I'm working with a lot of different projects right now, a bunch of bride and grooms, which is really neat. It's really cool to see, they send me photos from their wedding day with candles and a guest. It's a cool gift. You can give somebody a mason jar of M&Ms and they're going to house them on the bus ride back to the hotel, or you can give them this candle that for the next 6 months, they're probably going to have in their house, and it's going to be burn. My tagline is like the gift that keeps on burning love, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, it's like every time they burn it, they think to themselves, oh, what a killer night. You remember when Michael Jackson was on the DJ was playing, we were dancing on the dance floor, you know, and you know, X, Y, and Z, you know, it just creates more of a memory than it does peanut M&Ms on the bus ride home. You know?
Right. Yeah. No, I get it. I get it completely. Cool. So where can people find out more about you and your business?
So www.meetingandmarket.com is our website. We do have some candles on Amazon, which if you just search meeting and market, I have to be honest though, I've pulled back the inventory a little bit on there. It just, Amazon's great. They're just can be super expensive. I mean, my large candle was costing me $10. That was their cost. That, and then you got to add on my manufacturing cost, and then add on PPC and SEO and every other thing you got to do to be relevant on Amazon. So there's a few stragglers on there, but Etsy right now, I guess you could just, if, I don't really know how to search on Etsy, maybe just meeting a market or just do wholesale candles and we should pop up from the wholesale side. I'm sure there's some boutique shop owners out there who are listening to this. And if you're, you know, need some privately labeled candles, we'd be happy to help. And then my biggest form of communication is Instagram. Instagram is amazing. I've met so many customers and clients and collaborations, and you can probably find that in the show notes at meeting and market_ but yeah, that's kind of where we are. And Facebook's there, but it's just Instagram just seems to be our bread and butter. And yeah, that's it. I mean,
cool. Well, I'll link all that up in the show notes. I'll have Instagram, the website. I'll try to find it on Etsy as well. Or if you can shoot me a link, we'll link that up as well. So people will find that directly if they're interested in any of the private label type stuff. So, because I think that would be pretty cool if somebody out there is getting married soon or something like that to link Absolutely. Up with you. That'd be pretty cool. I mean, it's a Tuesday afternoon for both of us, Tuesday evening now. So I definitely appreciate you taking the time and your off a little break that you have here, a little downtime. So thanks for spending a little bit of time with us and the Hustle to Freedom audience. We definitely appreciate it. And I had a blast chatting with you.
Great. And if I can just add one last thing here off the podcast. I just got an email that I just sold another 30 candles to a boutique shop in Chicago.
There you
That's
go.
That's pretty cool. That's the beauty of e-commerce. You know, it's working when you're not. I need to get in the lab and make some candles, right?
Exactly. There you go. That's awesome. That's awesome, Mark. Appreciate you swinging by. And hopefully when we get off, you'll have another 30 more.
Absolutely, man. If you are in Charleston, again, give me a ring and I'll be happy to grab a beer with you downtown or something.
Awesome. Sounds good. And that's a wrap. I hope you all enjoyed that episode. This episode was a perfect example of how you don't have to be an expert to start something. You just have to have an idea and relentlessly pursue it. Be sure to go pick up a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal over at gritandhustle.co if you haven't already. So, Freedom Chasers, if you like these episodes, be sure to go rate and review the podcast in iTunes or in the Apple Podcast app. It would mean a ton to me. Until next time, keep hustling.